say the dog gets sick.
Well,
that's next.
That's summertime fun.
Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, so now the Gopal Guru Goswami has asked Vijay to see if he can tell the difference, or means what's the relationship between Shuddha Sattva and Misra Sattva. Right? Very important question. Right? Because we'll say, well, one's, you know, material, one's spiritual. But then so in theory it works very nice, but the problem is when we go to apply it, then it's like the smartest who are situated in goodness, they think they're automatically in Shuddha Sattva. And the devotees, because they're working in Shuddha Sattva on the devotional platform, they think that they're automatically in the Sattva platform materially. Mm. You understand? So the problem is it's not understood. Otherwise, why is it asked at this point in the conversation, right? You would think this is a question for way in the first six chapters, I mean 10 chapters, when they're just discussing Samanya Bhakti, or at least within the middle of that. No, this is in the last ones. Because this is what it means before is that you know you engage your duty in the Lord's service. Your duty is the mode of goodness. There are no duties, at least for Vaishnavas in Vaishnav Tantra, that are in the mode of passion or ignorance. There just aren't any. Right? That's for people who can't function in Shuddha Sattva, then passion or ignorance are given. Does that make sense? Right? So, therefore, it's being brought in here because then you can't tell the difference between transcendental rasa and material rasa. Because the point is mechanics look the same. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You know, so it's important. Okay, so then Vijay is speaking. Life or being presupposes sata, existence. When existence, form, ability, and activity are present in any entity, that entity is designated as sattva. Because right? Otherwise, how are they? Means they're existing and they're acting. So that is sattva. Right? So existence with activity, that's sattva. That's sattva.
And ability means knowledge?
Well, here you have form and ability and activity. So means your existence is there. So then there's a form, because there has to be something that's existing. Some form is existing. Even if you say it's Brahman, that's a particular kind of form, right? Though it's a formless form, but it's a form, right? And then ability is what you can do. It means what that particular form can do, because every form matches certain abilities. Is that make sense? Yeah. And then the activity that goes along with the ability. So that's applying that ability. Now, according to the ability, means that infers the kind of activity, but also to the degree of the activity. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, let's say, the person is a musician, but he's playing fourth chair. So that means he's okay, but he's not that great. You know what I'm saying? But the worst in the first chair, they have the same kind of ability, meaning in the nature of what they're doing, they're in music, but their ability is much greater. Yes. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
Is ability the potential to do something, and activity is
Is applying it, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because your existence, form, and ability, on one sense, is all, how do you say? That's your sambandha. But at the same time, activity is what activity is there. It's not we're not necessarily discussing that it's been applied. So you can say is that, therefore, all the aspects of sambandha jnana are there. Right? Means that they're actually, they exist. And then what is the particular, the form that is there, because that form will give you your results, so therefore the ability that's there, the potential, and then the actual activity. So all aspects are being represented, right? So now you can say that person exists. Because existence is not just that they're there, but you have to also appreciate what is the form, what are the potentials of activity, right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. That state of existence that is eternal, endless, ever fresh, perennial, unaffected by time, either past or future, and is infused with extraordinary wonder, is called Shuddha Sattva. Right? So this, in other words, we're establishing that Shuddha Sattva and Misra Sattva are two states of existence. Right? We're just taking it by, okay, what activity you perform. You perform the devotional activity, that's Shuddha Sattva. You have the material activity, that's Misra Sattva. In one sense, that's okay, but only designates activity. You understand? But then the problem is one isn't looking at existence, but, you know, one takes that for granted. But form and ability, that's what's totally left out of it. Because, yes, I'm doing devotional service. Okay, so what's the form and ability of it? Okay, you're a manager. What's the form of management? What is the ability of management? Form is whatever I think should be done, and my ability is anything that I have an opinion on, that's the final. So is that the form and ability of management, according to Manu? No, so that's the point. We can't tell what is Mr. Sattva and Shuddha Sattva. We know we've gotten the activity that is being done for Krishna. That's Shuddha Sattva. Right? And we're taking it, you know, that, you know, if we bring it up in a conversation, I'm the soul. But at the moment of management, there's no soul there. You're dealing with the body and its false ego. You understand? So this is why this is such an important question. We'll think, no, that's easy. Yes, it is easy in just definition. But in applying it, it's not, because this kind of definition generally we wouldn't give. It wouldn't be as comprehensive. So that means the form of the manager means, yes, he's in charge, but he has to work under authority. And he has to make decisions based on authority. Does that make sense? That's the part that gets left out. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Means people ran empires from Arthashastra and Dharmashastra. You know what I'm saying? But we have to read everything and anything else. Why? Because we can't see the sattva in that. We just say, oh, that's just theory. No, that's actually how a human being manages. You understand? So that's the point. We can relate to Shuddha Sattva and whatever lower mode that we appreciate. But the mode of goodness, that's very hard to appreciate. Because the mode of goodness means you're recognizing with this activity there's a form, and with a form there's an activity. Right? Does that make sense? So that is set by nature. No, I can do anything I want because we're the soul. Yes, but the problem is you're embodied. And even if you take it that you're not, you're in a spiritual body. As we pointed out, Mother Jashoda sticks to her duties that go with her body. Why? Because that's the mentality. The mentality develops the body. So if you have a particular body, that's because of your mentality. So you have to act according to that mentality. Because everyone wants to break all rules and do everything. That's all. So it's not that, well, I'm unique, I'm doing this. No, every living entity thinks that. Mm-hmm. Every living entity thinks that, yes.
Right, so then when activity doesn't match the form, then rasabhas is...
Yes, then it's rasabhas. So that's why people don't like it. They don't know why, because they can't explain the science. They just know, I don't like that guy, or I don't like what he's doing. He's a nice guy, but what he's doing isn't right, or something doesn't match. You know, You know, just like I mentioned, you know, at the you know, you have the mom pushing the pram down the road, but, you know, she's in, you know, like those super high heels and super tight low-cut jeans and super tight tank top with all kinds of things hanging off, you know, like that. And so then you know, it just doesn't match, you know. You know, she doesn't have to be in some dowdy, you know, 1700s outfit or something, but but the point is you kind of think the two, you know, in other words, is the kid just an accessory, yeah. You know, like that, you know. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, so that is eternal. Right. In other words, it's on the eternal platform. Material mystery activities aren't on the eternal platform. So this is where it gets the problem, because you're performing an activity with a body that's temporary, with things that are temporary. But now, are you getting the eternal result? Right. So if you're doing it for Krishna, you're getting an eternal result. Right. Endless means devotional service always goes on. It doesn't stop and start. Otherwise, Shuddha means it always is constant. Right, ever fresh, because it's about Krishna. Krishna's ever fresh, so anything contacting him will be ever fresh. Right? Perennial. What does that mean? I mean, I know it means flowers that...
Every year.
It means every year, perennial. But I think it means that they're always there. Maybe here it's ever fresh, endless, meaning that's the mood of that you're committed to it, but perennial means that it's always fixed. It's not going where you don't have to redo it every time. I think that. Unaffected by time, right? So in other words, if whether you're dealing with elements of past, present, or future, you're still fixed in devotional service, right? Otherwise, the tendency is the future or past to get distracted from devotional service. Motive passion from the future, motive ignorance from the past, right? Infused with extraordinary wonder, because it's about Krishna. So Krishna is wondrous, so it's always wondrous. If you look at, when you hear stories of devotees, devotional service they've done, you know, it's devotees sit down, some they talk, you know, Sankirtan stories or some other preaching. They're amazing. They're wondrous. Like how that's happening. Right? So that's the thing, because that's the Shuddha Sattva. Anything begotten by the Shuddha Chit Shakti, pure spiritual energy, is Shuddha Sattva. Right? So we mentioned that before. It's begotten by that means it starts there. Means you're starting from, this is for Krishna, so anything expanding from that will always be Shuddha Sattva. Right? Means if you're starting with yourself and then surrendering that to Krishna, then you're sure that at least that much of it's gotten to Shuddha Sattva, but whether all of it's gotten there is another thing. Right? Because then you're starting with the Misra and trying to bring it to Shuddha. But if you're starting with the Shuddha Sattva, then when you bring it down into the realm of the external energy, it'll still stay that way. Right? That's what Krishna's mentioning in the end. Give up all varieties of religion. Means give up anything that's not connected to him. Right? Does that make sense? Because you can do given charity not because it pleases Krishna, just that's the pious thing to do from the Shastra. Right? But if you're starting with you want to do something to please Krishna, right, and then taking care of the devotees or doing things for the devotees is like that, then that's Shuddha Sattva. Because you started with Krishna. Then you're looking at, okay, what are the ways to please Krishna in this area? Because the other one is, what would I like to do, then connecting that to Shastra. Or if you're more in the mode of goodness, you start from Shastra, but what benefit you get, but then that benefit is given to Krishna. Does that make sense? There's lower modes, you try to bring it to the higher modes and then bring it to Krishna. If it's in the higher modes, then you try to get rid of the personal, I mean the selfish element and bring it to that selfless, then give it to Krishna. Right? But we're saying is that here is that you're starting with Krishna, how to please Krishna in this situation. So therefore, if you proceed from there, it will always be Shuddha Sattva. Is that yeah. So, yeah. The Maya Shakti, that is the shadow representative of Chit Shakti, is controlled by the time factor, which manifests the concepts of past, present, and future. Right? So Maya Shakti is controlled by time, so you always get these different elements, right, of the feeling of past, present, and future, but it's actually controlled by that, because what's past is gone. Right? But in the spiritual world, something past, you remember it, it's present. something in the future you're thinking about is connected to Krishna, it's present. So there's only a feeling of past and future, just for the rasa. Right? Does that make sense? So that feeling I'm going to meet Krishna, or in the present I'm with Krishna, or I was with Krishna. Right? So those feelings are there, but the point is there is no time, so you're always with Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. All the activities of the Maya Shakti take place within the domain of the time factor. They are created, having a beginning, and are thus stamped with Maya's creative quality of Raja, passion. Right? Everything is created, so it has that stamp of, you know, how you say, the stamp of Maya. Right? You know? Right? Those same activities are also marked for destruction. Right? So anything that's created will be destroyed. It's just how it works. Right? And then there's that 11th of a second in between where they're maintained. Those same activity, okay. Hence, they are also stamped with Maya's destructive quality of tama, ignorance. Right? Because creation is done with passion, then destruction is done with ignorance. Entities endowed with such qualities of existence are called Mistra Sattva. In contrast, the Shuddha Jiva is Shuddha Sattva. His form, qualities, and actions are by nature in pure goodness. However, when the Shuddha Jiva is imprisoned by Maya, his pure energy is contaminated by Maya's illusory potencies in the form of material bodies of Raja and Tama. Thus, the materially conditioned Jiva is said to be in the status of Mistra Sattva. Okay, so the soul on its own is always Shuddha Sattva. So if he takes up activities from that platform, he'll always be situated there. But if he comes under the illusory energy, even though the soul is Shuddha Sattva, then he becomes covered and then he's under the passion and ignorance of the living entities, right? Because technically goodness is goodness, right? The problem is in the material world, goodness always has passion and ignorance. Therefore, it's called mixed. We'll say, okay, now there's a predominance of goodness, but it means there's always passion and ignorance mixed with it. But in the spiritual world, then that goodness never has passion or ignorance. So then that's designated a Shuddha Sattva. That makes sense? So therefore, he only has to define passion and ignorance within the material platform, because he's already defined it on the spiritual platform. Does that make sense? Because the activity is that it's eternal. If you follow the Vedic injunctions, the injunctions are eternal. They're endless. They're ever fresh or perennially. They're unaffected by time, either past or future. Right? So now if we're saying the Vedic culture is affected by time, it's 2012, so that doesn't work. It's 5,000 years old. Then we're saying it's actually in passion or ignorance. But it's unaffected by time. It applies today just as much as it did 5,000 years ago. Right? Nothing's left out. Right?
And also in Europe.
And also in Europe, yeah. Still.
Just checking.
Just checking, yeah. Yeah, everywhere but. Yeah.
So Shuddha Sattva is...
But that's the question, right? Yeah. It means that's the doubt. You're not sure. But what is 100% completely sure is America. Now that you know, Vedic culture has nothing to do with it because of the time factor and just this out of it. But Europe, you're not quite sure. Maybe, maybe not, is the question. Now Asia, it's obvious. It's got to be the yes, of course. Yeah. Okay. So now the doubt's clear?
Yeah. That doubt is clear.
Okay.
Shuddha Sattva is pure unalloyed goodness?
No, it's just pure goodness. It means because goodness is goodness. Now the thing is you're unalloyed. That's the devotion.
That's devotion. Yeah.
Right. So it's just within that. Then you're pure unalloyed means that you're not even looking for your own spiritual happiness. Because the thing is it's not a problem in a relationship that you're enjoying it. They're enjoying it. It means you're looking after their enjoyment, but you also appreciate the whole thing. So that's pure goodness. I mean, that's pure bhakti. But pure unalloyed means you don't even worry about your own happiness. So that's even more intense. Right? But we only see that in some occasional points. You know, means if you take relationships that's very intense, you know, the parent and the child, you know, romantic element of the couple like this, there's moments where it's so intense that they don't really seem to, at the point, worry about themselves. So you're just taking that as the standard. You know, it's not an occasional thing that happens. Right? It's just that's the standard of how Braj functions. All other realms, then, that will sometimes be manifest to that degree, but generally it's you know, just comfortable, relaxed. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the... Yes?
Yeah, one of I recall, I think it's from 11th canto, there are mentioned is Svarupasiddhi Bhakti and Svabhava Bhakti, later on meaning kind of the engaging of the conditioned nature of the Krishna story. So would we think that the first one is like the Sutta Sattva?
I mean, you'd have to look at it. It's better you know the definitions before you ask, or I know the particular verse. You know what I'm saying? But the point is you do have what is going on in the spiritual world, and you do have what's in the material world that you're engaging in the activities of the spiritual world. It's only because technically those from the spiritual world don't make a distinction. If you're engaged in pure devotion here, they don't make a distinction. But we have to make a distinction because the tendency is we'll think whatever we're doing is perfect, right? Because we're perfect. But the point is it's the soul that's perfect, not the conditioning. Because the conditioning was created and it will be destroyed. So it's not perfect. But if being connected to the Lord, that makes it perfect. Right? So that means in the spiritual world, then all this existence, form, ability, activity are all on that pure platform. Nothing is been stamped for creation or destruction. Right? So therefore, that's the natural form of the Shuddha Sattva. You can perform that here because you're the soul. Because the material energy can't. There's nothing here that you can connect to the spiritual world. Right? It's because the soul is there. And the soul is doing it in bhakti. Therefore it's connected. You understand? You know, Maya's arrangement, that's another thing. She's a devotee, so don't worry about that one. Right? You have to worry about ourself. That we're the one that's not Krishna conscious. Right? So from our perspectives, as we mentioned, I'm a devotee, so anything I do is spiritual. Does that make sense? Or I'm doing things that's recommended, so therefore automatically it's spiritual. See, that's because we can't tell the difference. So then we make those mistakes. So that's the idea, is how not to make the mistakes. That's for us here. That would be how we practically apply it in our devotional service. But the other application here is that now they're going to discuss the difference between the rasa as it's performed in the spiritual world and its perverted, inverted reflection in the material world. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, how do you discuss the conjugal rasa? Unless you understand everybody there, everything's eternal, everything's perfect, so therefore it's perfect. The problem is the material world doesn't function on those platforms. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Goswami, your explanations are very subtle indeed. Now tell me, how is the heart of the jiva enlightened by Shuddha Sattva? Vijay, as long as the jiva is captivated by this material world, the brilliance of his Shuddha Sattva nature is curbed by the residual opacity of mundane conditioning. What is opacity?
You can't see through it.
You can't see through it. Oh, okay. It means like the opaqueness. Opacity. Okay, nice. Ah, now I get it. I was wondering, where did all these fancy words come from? Now I got it. Sarvabhava. Because this is his translation. Yeah. It just dawned on me. Yet, the jiva may realize his sarup in proportion to the arising of his brilliant Shuddha Sattva nature. Right? It means, as you become purified, you're naturally able to understand your sarup. Right? So the first element of the sarup, the one that's always fixed, is I am servant of Krishna. Right? Mm-hmm. The one always has to remember, that is the sarup. A detail of that is that service being rendered through which rasa, right? And in which realm. Those are details. You know what I'm saying? I'm a servant in Dwarka. I'm a servant in Mathura. I'm a servant in Vaikuntha. I'm a servant in Vrindavan. Those are details of I'm a servant. Right? Does that make sense? Because otherwise we jump to immediately when it says, oh, then it means it uncovers the Shudasap, his Swarup. So therefore, yes, you know, my particular form in the spiritual world. That's next. But unless you have the point, I'm servant of Krishna, what does it matter if that's revealed? You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like telling a five-year-old kid, yeah. You know, it says, you know, you're playing around there and see like that, you know, like that, you know. And then you tell him, see that girl over there, you know, like that? Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, she's an idiot, that one. Says, well, you're going to get married and have three kids with her and all that and have, you know, two dogs and a horse. You know, yuck. You know, like that. You know,
I don't
says,
like you.
Yeah, you know, says it's not going to work. What's the importance? But if you tell the kid, you know, you have to be responsible and you grow up, you know, you're going to have your own family and have to take responsibility, something, they can relate to that. Right? You just haven't brought into detail that he actually has to marry a girl. You know, like that. But if you just say have a family, this, that, they're fine with that. You can tell that to three-year-olds. There's no problem. But as soon as you get into specifics, that's where the problem comes. So the same way is one has to stick to I'm servant of the Lord. Mm-hmm. The others, that will come with time. However, the uncovering of his Shuddha-Sattva nature cannot be achieved through the pursuit of either karma or jnana. Right? So it's not what activity you do, and it's not what knowledge you have that will uncover it. Right? Can dirt be cleansed by another form of dirt? Right? You know, the example being given is you can't wash your hands with blood to get away, get rid of the blood. Like that.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? You have to use something pure to get rid of the dirt. So you can't use karma and jnana, which is the dirt of being covered in the material world. I was going to say, why is the sun shining from here? You can see it? Or?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. You should put mirrors along here.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, so you can't purify something dirty with something dirty. So we're the ones that have given such great eminence to karma and jnana. You know, you do good work, then that's special. Or you have great knowledge, then that's special. Now, now it's like this. If you have somebody who's like a PhD, and they're working on, you know, like say, you know, some kind of world benefit or welfare or some kind of greeny thing or like that, you know, some kind of social upliftment. Now, they're kind of pretty much on the top of the pile, right? Socially, right? And then there's the people who actually run the world, right?
Yeah.
You know, so does that make sense? But the point is socially, we'll say, oh, this is perfect, right? If there's somebody who's doing social work, right? You know, he came from the slums, he moved up, you know, he got a little bit of something, he's really working for, that's great, you know? Or he's an intellectual, he's sitting down at the university, that's not, you combine the two, bingo.
Yeah.
You know, that's our man, right? You know? Man of the year goes to one of those, not to one of the other ones. Right? Okay. Mundane karma is by its very nature contaminated. How can it remove material impurities? Moreover, jnana is like fire, for if it is applied to a contaminated object, it not only burns the impurity, but also the object itself, attempting to nullify the object's fundamental existence. That's the problem. So the jnana gets rid of the impurity because you're working on naishkarmi, but it also gets rid of the object. Does that make sense? So that's on its own, right? You know, so, yeah. Therefore, how can jnana provide the joy that comes from being purified? Right? Because it can't. The knowledge of jnana will burn up the impurity and the object itself. The example is given of wood. Right? If there's any impurities in the wood, by lighting it on fire, it purifies it. But it also gets rid of the wood. So at the end, the wood's been fully purified, and then there's nothing. There's no fire, there's no, it's just, that's the problem with that, because that's Brahman existence. That's bringing you the platform of Brahman. So that's, but yeah, does that make sense? So it can't also help you. Right? The karma itself implicates you. So even if you do in the mode of goodness, it implicates you in goodness. And if you take the knowledge, it'll get rid of the impurities that are there, but it'll leave you with nothing. You understand? So we see how we get these two philosophies, you know, that of the voidist kind of elements, you know, the Buddhist and the impersonalist, and then the other, the karmakanda, do good work and all that, because that's the best you can get out of these two. Right? And then the lower form, then they'll consider less. Right? Like spiritual knowledge would be considered better than material knowledge. Right? And good work will be considered better than bad work. By the mercy of Guru, Krishna, and the Vaishnavas, the jiva can attain bhakti, which alone can invoke the Shuddha-sattva lying dormant within his heart. When Shuddha-sattva is awakened, it will illuminate the heart with pure transcendental light. So therefore, but you can say, no, but you can do so many nice things for Krishna, have so much use the knowledge for Krishna, but that's the point. Until it is touched with, by the mercy of Guru, then jiva can attain bhakti. So only when bhakti is invoked, then they become useful, right? Then the activity becomes useful. The freeing yourself from the impurities of the material energy by knowledge, that becomes useful. Because point is, once you get to the liberated platform, you have bhakti, you continue on the spiritual, with spiritual form and everything. Otherwise, you get rid of this one. Now what do you do? Right? So that's why those in the Brahman, they come back to the material world, because you need a form to perform activities. Right? Because there is desire. You can't get rid of desire. Goswami, my son, truly it is a pleasure to instruct a fit candidate like you. Do you have any further questions? So does that make sense? So in other words, when it touches on, by the grace of Guru, transcendental knowledge, right, on devotional service, then whatever you're doing comes into that realm of Shuddha-sattva. Right? But if it's not, it doesn't matter how good it is, the material arrangement, it's always Mistra-sattva. Right? Because there's always some point that is there. The demigods, they're working in goodness. Right? Like that. But you see, it means, do we have to drop down into the stories of the human beings of that are Vaishyas and Shudras within the world? Right? Do the Vedas have to do that to give nice stories? No, it's all talking about Brahmins and kings on this level and about demigods. Right? You know, and you throw in the demons for some spice. You understand? Because still, even though you're dealing with goodness here, that whatever little mix is there, because if they're not devotees, they always do something crazy. Isn't it? That makes sense. Yeah. So like that. So that's why it's always Misra. It doesn't get better than Misra in the material world. Only by the grace of Guru, then one can get touch with devotion. Then the activities can take on the platform of Shuddha-sattva. Does it make sense? Mm-hmm. So this has been mechanically, how you say it? The metaphysics of it have been described. Right? Does that make sense? Because otherwise, it's correct when devotees say, yes, we do it for Krishna, that's correct. But the point is can you always tell the difference when you're doing it for Krishna when you're not? You know what I'm saying? Or you are, but it's mixed. Like that. That's then where the more technical becomes useful. Right? Vijay. Gurudev, earlier you described the four types of Nayaka. Dhirodatta, Dhira Lalita, Dhira Santa, and Dhirodatta. Which of these is Krishna? Right? Do you remember that before? What we were saying is that the Dhirodatta was one who did everything very nicely. Right? The example is Lord Ramachandra. Dhira Lalita is one who is always is submissive to the girlfriends. Right? Always very attractive, always very clever, but always, you know, under the control of the women. Right? Then Dhira Shanta is one who is, you know, he's exemplary. His example is one to be followed. Always does everything perfect attitude, you know, like that. So Yudhishthira Maharaj is an example. And Dhirodatta is one where, you know, anger, envy, all these different things seem to come out and all that. So then, you know, like Krishna Arjuna, I mean, excuse me, Balaram killing for Lambasura, or like this, where the demons are getting out of hand and they're being dealt with, Krishna killing Kamsa. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yeah. So now it's a question of which one of these is Krishna, right? Goswami. Krishna can play all these roles. Whatever slightly contradictory and distinctive bhavas that may exist between each of these different nayikas are all perfectly harmonized within Krishna, because he is the embodiment of all rasa endowed with the chinta shakti. Right? So he's all of them, even though they seem to be so different, because generally you see in an avatar they take one of these. Right? Or maybe two, but not all four. Krishna's the only one that you see all four of them. Of course, if you look, if you understand, you'll see all four in any one of them. But you'll see a prominence. Right? Does that make sense? Like Krishna with the gopis, it's always dear Lalita. Does that make sense? But you have all these other aspects. Okay. These apparent disparities are present by his own arrangement. Besides these four unique personality traits, Krishna is embellished by another mysterious feature that is known only to extraordinary rare personalities. Okay, so these are the four, and then he's saying that there's another mysterious feature. Vijaya, Gurudev, you have showered your mercy without any reservation, so kindly let it flow further, even referring to this topic, right? Because he says, to extraordinary, rare personalities. Don't stop now. As Vijaya Kumar spoke, he was overwhelmed with intense emotions. He fell down at Srila Gopal Guru Goswami's feet, bathing them in his tears. Deeply moved, Srila Gopal Guru Goswami bent down and embraced him, and their tears mingled. Srila Goswami then sat back silently. His voice was choked up, and he was unable to speak. Finally, in a faltering voice, he said, In Madhurya Rasa, Krishna assumes two distinct roles as Nayika, Pati, husband, and Upapati, paramour. Vijaya, Gurudev, Krishna's our eternal Pati, so why is he called an Upapati? Right? So this is where the feature that's not well understood comes in. Right? Because we see, okay, Krishna's like the husband because he's the Lord. So how is it the Upapati? Goswami, this very confidential knowledge is shrouded in profound mystery. Transcendental affairs are like rare sparkling gems of magnificent mystery. And the crest jewel, Kastuba Mani, amongst them, shining with an intense aura, is Parakiya Bhava, the paramour mood of Madhurya Rasa. Right, so Madhurya Rasa itself is what do you call it? What he used?
Confidential,
yeah. But now the parakia is even more. Because how it's going on, because as we see, many times people quote Jiva Goswami, then he had to present Swakya Rasa to his disciples, at least some group of them. Right? Because they could not appreciate parakia, because it seems to be against the rules. Right? That's why you have to be able to tell the difference between what's pure and what's mixed. Because within the material world, it will always be mixed. Right? But in the spiritual world, it's not mixed. It's on the transcendental platform. So how that works. So that being appreciated, that's more rare. Vijay, in Madhurya Rasa, the pure devotees serve and love Krishna as their pati. What is the purport of worshipping him as one's Upapati? Goswami, when the Paratattva, Supreme Absolute Truth, is asserted as exclusively impersonal, rasa necessarily has to be excluded from his nature along with his personality. Right? So in other words, Brahman, you're not looking at the personality here. You're just looking at the element of Paratattva is there, and so he's there, he has his potencies, but it's not applied specifically. Right? It's just a general principle. Like when we say, okay, the column here, then the masculine principle, the feminine principle, so the column is the feminine principle, the strength is the masculine principle. But it's not a specific masculine or specific feminine, and the interaction is, you understand? So it's impersonal. Right? So rasa is excluded here. We're just defining the two how they function. Right? Does that make sense? Vedic truths, such as the statement in the Chandogya Upanishad 8.13.1, rasa vaisaha. That supreme absolute truth is the personification of all rasa. Become meaningless and denied. The impersonal aspect of the supreme is insipid, lacking in luster and spiritual bliss. However, as Krishna's personal feature unfolds before his devotee, rasa is increasingly manifest, because rasa is the principal aspect of the paratattva. Right? So when we're talking paratattva, we say parabrahman, we mean the whole aspect, means Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. Right? But we may be talking about the manifestation as just we're dealing with the Brahman aspect. But it doesn't have taste. That's the point, because there's no rasa. So when they say Brahmananda, the Ananda Brahman, that indicates rasa or interaction, but by their definition, there is no individuality, there is no interaction, so therefore there is no rasa, there's no Ananda. Right? It just can't have, by definition. So it's only then when the personal feature of the Lord is revealed to the devotee, then rasa starts. So that degree it's revealed, to that degree it is appreciated, that intensity is there. Higher than the impersonal aspect of the paratattva is the personal aspect of the Supreme Absolute Being. Initially, this personal aspect appears in the role of Ishwara, the Supreme Controller. That is the object of Shantaras. Right? Because that's the best that one gets, is Shantaras. So even if you're talking about a monotheistic, which we'll come into very shortly in the Tattva Vivek, it can't get above that. I mean, sometimes you get the aspect of serving, but serving who? Serving what? How? So it's more just an appreciation. You know what I'm saying? They're sitting around with their big crosses and swords and chainmail and their horses, right, out in a bunch of sand. And then they decide, you know, these Muslims are too much. We got to do something. And so then one of them then, of course, has to say, it's God's will. And then they all go, yes, it's God's will. But whose will was it? Right? You know what I'm saying? They're Kshatriyas, they're fighters, so therefore they want to fight with the Muslims, so therefore they say it's God's will. So, but their thing is God's great, God's friend, so therefore, but they think they're doing service, but they're doing service, but it's only their conditioning that they're addressing. They're not connecting that conditioning to God. Otherwise, if he is great, then everything is his, all souls are his, so that means even the Muslims are his. So why would you have to go and fight with them? You know what I'm saying? So in other words, it's limited how much is there. It appears that there's other rasas, but basically speaking, they're only dealing at best in shanta. But much of the time, even that, its predominance, the central feature of that shanta is fear. Right? Because they're afraid, if I don't do this, then there'll be a problem. You know, I'd like to do so many things, but I don't, out of fear.
Lucky for them, the Muslims are saying the same thing.
Yes. No, I'm saying they're all beings. We just gave an example here. But all monotheistic, that's what they do. But it's only if the Vaishnava element, then you can move forward deeper into the rasa, because you actually understand the personal aspect. Because they never get beyond Paramatma, technically. Mm. Right? And even that's doubtful, because when you say, what does he look like, then it goes back to Brahman again. So it's Brahman. Then you add in the personal features, but as Ishwara, as Paramatma. But then when you try to go farther, again, it goes back to Brahman. So you start with Brahman, end with Brahman. And in the middle, there's, you know, Paramatma. Does that make sense? So we see yoga does that also. So many of them do that. They talk about that personal aspect. But like you're saying, Nyaya, then they start with that. But at the end, there's no discussion of God. Right? Does that make sense? So they're starting with that by logic and analyzing the world, you can see the patterns and understand what you are and not. So that's the Brahman aspect, right? But that's controlled by the Supreme Lord, the Paramatma aspect. But once you perfect yourself and figured out that you're not any of this, then again it goes back to the Brahman. So that's at best how mundane works. It doesn't get better than that. Okay. So only within Vaishnavism, then you see beyond that. Still above this feature of the Supreme Controller is his personality as Prabhu, Lord and Master. That is the object of Dasya Rasa. Thus, Rasa expands gradually from Dasya to Sakya to Vatsalya and from there to Madhurya. And within the Madhurya Rasa, the Parakiya Bhava, Paramar mood, is superior to the Svakiya Bhava, married mood. There are two other aspects of Krishna as Purusha. Atmaramata, completeness and self-satisfaction, and Pararamata, enjoyer of those separated expansions and energies emanating from himself. Okay? So there's the Atmarama, Atmaramata, and Pararamata, right? So in other words, the aspects of he is the complete whole, everything is him. He's ever expanding, all energies are there, he's perfect. The taste of that, that's one taste. The other is that expansion of the energies, the interaction with those energies, that's the Pararamata. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So Krishna has both. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. In the Atmaramata aspect, the enjoyment of rasa is solely reposed within Krishna and takes no assistance from any other entity. Right? So it's just within himself because everything is himself. So he can do that. Right? We can't do that. It means in the material world, those within the masculine form have a touch of this aspect of Atmarama and Atmaramata and Pararamata. Because a man can just be on his own, and do things. Right? But then when he wants to interact in the social platform, then that Pararamata must come out. Problem is generally they don't know how to switch between the two. Right? So they either, if they're happy, they come from the one and they're happy, they come into the from the Atmaramata into the Pararamata. And then don't switch, so then the women get upset. Or they're in the Pararamata, and then it starts to get a little tricky. And so it's so much easier in Atmaramata, so they pull back. And then the women freak out again. So in other words, women freak out at Atmaramata. Right? Pararamata means then it's working within the sphere of in the interaction. As soon as it goes into the other, then where's the space for them? Right? Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that one has to know these two. So the devotee means the brahmachari is trained in the Atmaramata at the same time how to properly interact with everybody. Right? So then he can naturally go into the Pararamata and then work within the Grihastha Ashram and Vanaprastha Ashram. Then at some point then that is left and again goes back to the Atmaramata. Right? Because you started that way, you can end that way. Does that make sense? But if that's not appreciated, then it will have a problem. In other words, it will create a problem that one can't live with women, but at the same time, one can't live without them. Right? Does that make sense? And so that's the problem, because they can't tell the difference. Right? So what does that mean? How do you tell the difference? What faculty do you use to tell the difference?
Intelligence.
Intelligence. So that means less intelligence. So less intelligence basically is a symptom of lack of training. Right? Once trained, then these things are naturally come. Does that make sense? Yeah? That's it.
You can't say that Atmaramata is masculine and Pararamata is feminine?
No, here Atmaramata means masculine exclusively. Pararamata means masculine with feminine. Yes. But here, because we're talking about Krishna, we're looking at it from his position, right? But until we understand that, then we won't be able. It means, in other words, if you can't tell the difference between material and spiritual, you can't actually get into rasa. The other rasas aren't such a difficulty because generally what you're dealing with is the noble aspects. But the point is what is the noble aspects within Madhurya rasa? Do you understand? There's very few of them that are taken as noble, right? So it becomes very hard to discuss. Then within that, we're going into from Swakya into Parakya. And technically speaking, where are any noble characteristics there except for just that passionate attraction to each other and that willingness to die for each other? Because that's all you have in Romeo and Juliet. There's nothing else that's there. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So it has very limited. So now you have to be able to move, accept the spiritual, that it's transcendental beyond all these things, then it can be discussed. But you have to start with Krishna, because if you don't understand him, he is everything, how you'll understand his energy? Right? In other words, if you can't understand the principle of what masculine is, you'll never understand what feminine is. Does that make sense? You know, the people come in and they think, oh, yeah, we know the girl, how they work and this and that. No, they have lines. But they don't actually know who women are. Does that make sense? Yes.
To what extent can a woman manifest that woman?
Means the point is there's no need. It's a matter of how much you connect yourself to Krishna. See, the feminine nature means it transfers from material to devotional. Does that make sense? So one, by the study of spiritual, then the woman sees that there is higher rasa, right? So then she may switch from material rasa to spiritual rasa. But women don't situate themselves on the spiritual platform without the rasa. Does that make sense? Men can do that, because at Atmarama they can move from not being involved in the material and not being involved in spiritual rasa and just remain there in neutrality in the middle, right? Does that make sense? So, you know, for the men, they kind of think that's pretty cool. But the thing is, problem is it's non-interactive. So if they're not going to be interactive, it's fine. But if they're going to be interactive socially, then does that make sense? So that's why sometimes you see... See, like with the brahmachari sannyasis, is that they'll be may situate themselves in that position, but depending on whether they understand the rules of that paramatmata or not, they may interact nicely or not with ladies. Then you have the element. Now, even you take okay, so if they understand and they just do it because that's the way you deal, then everybody's cool with that, right? Now let's say if you're taking Atmarama talk where they don't know. Now if it is... Okay, no, let's just go back. So now they know how to deal. So as long as it's done without attachment, then everybody feels that's very nice. If it's done with attachment, then as long as it's controlled, then everybody, the women are comfortable, but they know this guy is still attached to women. Right? Does that make sense? Now if you drop down into the Atmarama talk, where they don't know how to deal with women, right? So now you'll get those who are actually don't need to be with women, so it'll be very innocent. So even though they don't actually know how to deal with a woman, the women don't mind, just like little babies don't know how to deal with women, but women don't have a problem with it because of the innocence. Does that make sense? But now if you have that brahmachari who is that in that atmaramata but still has attachment to women, and doesn't know how to deal with them, they'll be annoying. You understand? So in other words, either of them, if they are actually not attached to women, either of them are considered nice. Like that. And then of the two who are still have attachment, the one who knows how to deal is better than one who doesn't know that deal. Because the worst is they're attached to women and don't know how to deal with them. That's the worst. Does that make sense? Yeah. And those are the ones that don't last as brahmacharis. But unfortunately, they don't make it as grihasthas either. So it's really a problem. Maybe after a long, long time, then they learn. You know. But, you know, in other words, where they should have started when they got married, that's kind of what they come to the platform of figuring it out when it's near the end. Like that, you know. So it's just a waste of 25 or 30 years, yeah. And then hopefully you don't avoid, you know, you avoid the, you know, try it over again. Yeah. Okay. Does that make some sense? Yeah. So in other words, women don't have to worry about it. For them, the knowledge about the spiritual and the difference between the two is just so you can differentiate between spiritual and material rasa. So one just switches from one to the other. So it's fine. So in that way, you could say it's more easy and direct for women than it is for men. But because of the problem of that attachment and dependence, the tendency is to hold on to the material unless you're totally convinced of the spiritual. Right? Well, the man can completely let go and not have grabbed onto the devotional yet. You know, it's just the nature of them. You know, it's just like, let's say someone wants to move to Mayapur, right? So you have your house in the West, and then you get a house in India. You understand? That would be how the woman will look at it. You don't sell the house in the West, you buy one in India. Right? So if you ever need to go back for visa or this or that or for friends or, you know, in case it's, you know, too hot, whatever it may be, you have a place. Right? That's how the women will think. The man will think, well, we have a thing here. We're not going to live here anymore. We could use the money to buy the place in India. So we sell this place and we move to India. Right? So that means you've sold the place. You don't have this place. You're not situated. There's that gap there. That's where the women have the problem. You understand? The men think it's perfectly normal. But they don't understand what's going on there. So they don't understand the masculine nature that's at work. So that's why they can't understand the feminine. Right? And then when it, you know, they're here, they get it all set up, a lot of difficulty and problem. Then they get it arranged and that. Then they go on for some time and then decide this isn't working out. Then want to move back to the West. So then you're trying to sell this so you can move back there. You know, and then you know, all the time, you know, having to listen to "I told you so," you know, and stuff like that. And so he's completely freaking out. You know, this, that, and there's so many things, but it's all totally. He just doesn't know what he's doing in rasa. It's that simple, like that. You know, basically, you know, no man will agree it's that simple, but it's that simple. You know, does that make sense? So that's the thing, is a man can just go off into the total unknown. Well, women generally will never do that. They want to go from known to the other known. But that other known is better than this known, so then you'll take it. Does that make sense? You know, it's like you have that bag, you've had it forever since this, but you really love the bag, you know. So, you know, but the thing is if it's, you know, that or, you know, a Louis Vuitton, okay, I'll take that. I'll give this one up only because I got that. But you're not going to give this up and then we'll go out shopping. Does that make sense? Yeah.
It's a good example.
Yeah.
Is that why Hollywood is obsessed with this idea of the maverick? Because you can't.
Hollywood's upset with the maverick.
Can't go off into the unknown.
That's there, the unknown, but you notice the maverick's always connected to women. You know what I'm saying? Somehow the Hollywood does great with them. That's the Hollywood maverick. It means if you have the French maverick, that's another thing. You know, or that, like that. You know, these European, then they go off and they're completely, you know, or some art house thing, you know, then he may be like that. But, you know, it's never popular. Why? Why isn't it popular? Why are the Hollywood more popular and the art house are not? Who's the one not going to the art house? According to this conversation. The women. You know, the intellectual, nerdy guys, they love the art house stuff. Yeah, the women don't, you know. You know, where's the conclusion? You know, they shot the girl and the guy's left, you know, there and he doesn't know what's going to happen and then the credits come up and you call that a movie? You know, and the nerds are going, wow, cool, you know. And everybody else goes, that was stupid. You know what I'm saying? So, the maverick is good because you do has that masculine element that's there, but you always see is that it works out with the girl. Like that. But that shows the strength, he can get things done and all that, so then that will make the women more confident that he can get things done. Means he can do the impossible, get out of everything, you know, go underground, who knows what he gets out of anywhere. He has no training, but he wipes out, you know, this highly trained, you know, unit of you know how you say, huh?
special forces
like that, you know, and all with a toothbrush or something, you know? And you know, does all that. So if he can do that, then definitely he'll be able to go to the market and pick up the cauliflowers. You understand? So it's comforting. But you do have, yes, there's that aspect of that masculine he's able to do. So, the women don't mind the Atmarama aspect in the man. Right? Does that make sense? But, in interaction, it has to be the Paramatmata. But on his own, if he's Atmarama, it's good. Because if he's Atmarama, then there's nothing to, you don't have to do anything for him. He just does stuff for you.
self-watering plant?
Yes. So it's the point is that so whenever they feel, then they do something, but it's not that they're obliged. Right? In other words, the more comfortable you are that you, when you feel like it, you can do something, and the other person's comfortable with that, the more comfortable a woman is. If she always has to put on the smile, even though she doesn't feel like it, that's okay in social systems. But then a situation. But then you can go home and be grumpy. So the man's wondering why she's grumpy all the time. That's because she's actually very satisfied.
Relaxed.
Yeah, she's relaxed. She's comfortable. She's secure. In other words, she's secure. Therefore, she feels she can be grumpy, and the guy's not going to get upset. You understand? So the point is, you know, therefore, if means if the grumpiness is directed at you, then you're doing good. The grumpiness is dealt at you, then you got to do something about it. But does that make sense? Not exactly the kind of things the man wants to hear, but that's the reality, right? Does that make sense? Does that lack of sense make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole point. That's what energy means. It's contradictory. Because if you say he's the supreme, he's you know all pervading, all knowing, you know, omniscient, all these different things, where's the contradiction? So it's only when you add energy, that's where contradiction comes in. So the contradiction is the energy. So he can, because it's hit, he can deal with it. And because he is Atmarama, he doesn't have a problem dealing with it. Because the more Atmarama the man is, the more he can deal with that contradictoriness. The less he is, the less he can deal. But unfortunately, the more he is, the more he can deal with this Paramatmata when he's around the women. The more the Atmaramata when he's alone, the more the Paramatmata when he's with the women. And the less the Atmaramata when he's alone, the less the Paramatmata when he's with the women. See? So it's a science. It's not a matter of tricks. Like in here, we haven't mentioned one trick. But on the male, men are from, Pleiades, and women are from, wherever, there's not, all they talk about is tricks. But it's not the tricks. That's why they have to write another book. Right? The Vedas write one book on this. They don't have to write another book. Arthashastra is one book. Dharmashastra is one book. You don't need another book. Right? If there are, then other books simply explain finer and finer details of the same principle. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So Krishna as Atmaram, he's enjoying his pleasure potency just within himself.
Within himself. In other words, it's not manifest. Because he is Ananda, so he's naturally happy. But the point is that happiness, the happiness found by interacting is greater than the Atmaramata. So the Pararamata is greater than Atmaramata. Okay. Krishna exhibits the nature of enjoying rasa by the charming assistance of other entities. Just as Krishna's Atmaramata aspect is eternal, so also is Pararamata aspect. The harmonious existence of these two opposing elements, inner self-satisfaction and assistant enjoyment, in the personality of the Supreme Purusha is his sole prerogative and nature for him. Right? Because he does it naturally. Right? So anything expanded then is feminine. So it does that naturally. So that's why without training, then the jiva in the masculine form doesn't know how to do it, because you have to have both of these, the harmonious existence of these two opposing elements, inner satisfaction, assistant joy. Because if you're inner satisfied, what do you need anybody else for? If you need somebody else, there's no inner satisfaction. So you have to be able to run both of them. So the real weakness is, unless you understand the masculine, you can't understand the feminine. That's why when we discuss the whole thing, you don't have to discuss much about the women. It's mainly about the men that you have to discuss. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. In his pastimes, Krishna manifests his Atmaramata nature in one sphere of activity, while in another sphere he displays his Pararamata nature. The highest mood of the Pararamata nature is displayed in his pastimes of Parakiya Bhava. Parakiya Rasa is the wondrous, magnificent nectar produced when the Nayaka, hero, and Nayika, heroine, are brought together by Raga, spontaneous love, even though their mutual relationship is Parabhava, the acceptance of one who belongs to another. Yeah, it means that there is that aspect that they belong to one another, but it doesn't have the swakya aspect of the legal ownership. Right? In other words, there's the emotional ownership, but there's not the physical ownership. Right? Or the social ownership. Does that make sense?
Means that there's the conception that someone else owns.
Yes, someone else owns, and so therefore you can't manifest in public. Right? Means, in other words, the woman is, it means if there's an affair, she's hiding that affair. You know, until what point? Right? When she thinks the other man is going to marry her and give up the relationship with his own wife. Then she thinks, now I have the full control. Now she becomes more open about it and couldn't care less. Does that make sense? Right? So the point is if you only have one but not the other, then that confidence is not there. Right? But of this, in the Parakya, already that intensity is there, that emotional element of that oneness is there, but at the same time is because of the thing, at any moment it can go, therefore you take advantage of it at any moment. Because the married is that, okay, if you don't work it out now, you can work it out later. Well, I don't feel like smiling now, I can smile later. But in the Parakya, you can't exactly do that, because you don't know if there'll be a later. You know what I'm saying? So you're more careful. So the circle of it goes much quicker. You know what I'm saying? The cycle in the married couple, it goes over months, can go one way and months the other way. So there's so much closeness and niceness, and then there'll be months of not, and then it'll go the other way. Right? But with this, it all happens within one pastime. That whole cycle. Because that's just the way energy works. It has to. Feminine nature is in that indirect. But it'll be done in a shorter time. So that whole complete thing is there. You might get a few days, but it'll be worked out very, very quickly. Because it doesn't. You don't have the time. You don't know. Does that make sense? You know, and then the way it's set up is that he's with the cowherd boys for a certain amount of time in the day. They know when it starts, they know when it ends, so therefore you have to take advantage of it. Because at 5 o'clock, you go home. Right? And then it's Mother Jashoda's scene. You know, Mother Jashoda also, he's there in the morning, he's there in the evening, so she puts that full energy. Right? Does that make sense? So it has much more of that element of Parakya is even written in within that, just the whole thing.
Also the cowherd boys, when they're out playing, they've been waiting.
They've been waiting?
So yeah, when the cowherd boys and Krishna are out and they go crazy, that has built up.
Means, I don't understand.
The pastime, is there also this Parakya element?
Yes, actually I'm saying at 5 o'clock they have to go home and she, you know, turn it back over to Mother Jashoda.
Because
actually it's Mother Jashoda's. You know, so you have that anyway is written in. You know, and so that's what we see is that, but then from that it creates that natural spontaneity, the better quality of interaction. Mm-hmm. What does modern culture try to do? Destroy that.
It destroys it.
So there's no time, place, or circumstance where you can't mix men and women or anything like this or any rasa you want. So therefore it's nothing special at any time. So if I don't take care of that, there. So there is no time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So all these things is that They don't know what they're dealing with. That's why, you know, to understand all this is very difficult. So the Veda just says, do like this. Mm-hmm. That's your duty. You may not understand fully why, but this is why. You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Rasa springs forth beginning from the Atmaramata feature, expanding upwards to the highest status in Parakya Madhurya Rasa. Thus, the Atmaramata nature is at the bottom of the Rasa barometer. Right? So it's within, but it's just right at the bottom. When Rasa slides down to the bottom, it begins to dry out. And when Rasa moves upward in the direction of Parakya Madhurya Rasa, it gushes with exuberance, right? So we say it's down when it's within the Arif knowledge, it's dry, right? You know, it means even if you're experiencing some ecstasy connected with Krishna consciousness, if you're below the liberated platform, it's considered dry, right? Though it's way beyond anything of the dryness of this world. Because it's actually rasa, but it's the drier aspect of rasa. Right? So then when it comes into the higher stage, then it becomes moist, and then higher than that, then wet. So that's what you're saying. As it goes, it gushes with exuberance. So it's not only wet, it's gushing with exuberance. It's so much, you know, that intensity and taste. When Krishna is the transcendental Nayaka, how many Parakya relationships... How may Parakya relationships be considered vile? Right? That's the point. Because remember, his original point that he made was, okay, Madhurya Rasa, but when we get into it, in this world, Madhurya Rasa is going on between man and woman. So in the spiritual world, it kind of has that funny element to it. So how can we appreciate that as purely spiritual? So now he's just actually answered that question. So therefore... He is the transcendental Nayaka. It's on the transcendental platform. There is no Mistress Sattva. It's only Shuddha Sattva. And that, how can it be vile? Right? There can't be anything bad about it. Yes. Vile. Vile means, you know, nasty. You know? Vijaya, kindly explain the distinctive role of Pati. Right? Because there's Pati and Upapati. Goswami, a man who accepts a maiden's hand in marriage is her pati. Vijaya, kindly explain the distinctive roles of an upapati, male paramour, and a parakya, female paramour. Goswami, any man who, because of intense love for a married or betrothed lady, trespasses all religious principles to win her love is an upapati. A married woman who, by disregarding the nuptial vows, ignores the religious edicts of heaven and earth and surrenders to a man who is not her husband is called Parakya. Parakya women are of two categories, Kanya, unmarried, and Parodha, married. Right? Because like in Vrindavan, you have the unmarried gopis. So they've surrendered to Krishna. They're the ones who do the Katyayani Vrata and everything. So they've surrendered to Krishna. They're unmarried. Right? Well, Radharani and her crew, they're married. Right? Does that make sense? Another advantage of early marriage. Right? Because then you can start that aspect of Parakya Bhava at an earlier age. Right? Otherwise, you have to wait till, you know, you finish your studies, establish your business and everything, so, you know, you're 28 or 32, you know, like that. Then all you can start, you know, like this. But here, then, it starts a little earlier.
Yeah.
Okay. Vijaya, what are the characteristics of the Swakya ladies? Goswami, Swakya women are married according to religious laws, are obedient to their husbands, and are fully dedicated to the religious institution of marriage, right? So it applies to either realm, but the point is that it's starting in the spiritual world. So they're married according to religious laws, right? You always see Krishna marries his wives. Even if he by Rakshasa marriage or Gandharva, they make that first commitment, there's always going to be the Brahma rite, right? Or Brahma, or one of the authorized rites. Does that make sense? So they're always married according to religious laws. are obedient to their husbands, because that's Krishna, and who are fully dedicated to the religious institution of marriage. So, you know, what they do, what he does, and the whole interaction, all those different kind of things. So they're completely dedicated. So that's the Swakya lady, right? You know, just like this, the pati is the man who accepts the maiden's hand in marriage as her patni. And so then the woman of that, then she accepts, according to the religious laws, everything, it works nicely. Vijaya, who are Krishna's Swakya consorts? Who are his Parakya consorts? Right? Because the male, you see, is she's married or not, whatever it is, because she's either married under the protection of the husband or under the protection of the father. So you have to break a lot of rules to make contact with that girl and start a relationship and to win her attention. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why then it's Parakya. Swakya, you see, is all according to the book. Right? And fortunately, Krishna's written the book, so he lives according to that book, so it works out. It's nice. It works. Right? It's not a bad thing. Right? Goswami, his consorts in Dwarka, all of whom are married to him, are Swakya, and his consorts in Vraja are mostly Parakya. Vijaya, what are the nuances and placements of these two categories of Krishna's consorts? In his Aprakrita Lila, eternally unmanifest pastimes. Okay, so in other words, we know the pastimes here has been described in the Bhagavatam. How is the placement of this within the in Goloka? Right? Because basically, they always work according to the mood here. So by describing the pastimes here, then you have described the pastimes there. All it is that there's subtle, you know, these external elements that aren't there, but the mood is the same. They think as if they're here. Right? Means there is no time, but they think as if there is. You understand? Okay. Goswami, this is an extremely esoteric subject. You already know that Krishna's vibhuti, divine opulence, is divided into four parts. Three parts are displayed in the spiritual world, and the remaining one part in the material world. Right? It means how the cosmic creation is divided up. The single part, the domain of the Maya Shakti, manifests the entire material cosmos, consisting of the 14 planetary systems. Between the material world on one side and the spiritual world on the other, a mass of water churns known as the Viraja River. The Chit Jagat spiritual world is surrounded on all sides by the brilliant peripheral zone as the Brahmadham, beyond which is the Paravyoma spiritual sky. Right? In other words, around the world is, means the universe, that water that's flowing, that's known as the Viraja River. Right? Does that make sense? Right? So each universe will have that around it. So that's the causal ocean. But when we're talking about in connection with the universe, then it's the Viraja. Right? Because you have to cross the Viraja to get into the spiritual world. Then, that's so between the material world and the spiritual world, first you have the Viraja, then you have the Brahmajyoti. Right? Then there's the spiritual world. So that's the Brahmadham. Vaikuntha is dominated by Aishwarya. In Vaikuntha, Sri Narayan reigns and is reverentially worshipped as the Supreme Lord of Lords, embellished with divine attributes and served by countless servants. In Vaikuntha, Sri Narayana exhibits Swakya Rasa. Sri Devi, Bhu Devi, and Nila Devi are his Shaktis and wives who serve him as their husband in Swakya Rasa. But Sri is Lakshmi. Right? Bhu is then her expansion of the Chit Shakti. In other words, she's the Hladini, she's the, and then the Bhu is Chit, and Sat is Nila. Right, so that Satchitananda, that's the three manifestations of the concept. Right? So in other words, yeah. Above Vaikuntha lies Goloka. In Goloka, the gopis of Vraja serve their beloved Krishna in their specific rasa. Vijaya, if Goloka is said to be Krishna's most elevated place of residence, why is Vraja described as such a glorious and splendid place? Right? In other words, if Goloka is said to be the highest residence, why is Vraja then specifically given that glorious position? Right? Goswami, places such as Vraja, Gokul, and Vrindavan are within the precincts of Sri Mathura Mandala. Nonetheless, Mathura Mandala and Goloka are on the same spiritual level. When the Dhamma principle is manifest as the highest abode in the spiritual sky, it is called Goloka, and when it is manifest on the material plane, it is known as Sri Mathura Mandala. Both are equally illustrious and transcendental.
Right.
It's just a matter of where it's manifest. If it's manifest in the Paravyoma, then it's called, you know, it's called Goloka. When it's manifest within the material plane, then it's called Mathura Mandala. Right? But it's the same place. It's not a difference in the place. Vijaya, Gurudev, it is difficult for me to understand how this can be possible. Goswami, Krishna's Achintya Shakti makes it possible. The mysterious workings of his Achintya Shakti are beyond the realm of logic, intellect, and nominal. Nominal means?
It's a very subtle, ethereal.
Okay, so beyond logic, intelligence, and the subtle.
Sometimes it's so called to be spiritual.
Okay, but here is beyond that. But you could also say, even if you're taking it as spiritual, it's beyond the Brahma Jyoti.
In the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada translates for those, I'll explain everything to you, both phenomenal and numinal.
Okay. Okay, so what's manifest and what's beyond. Okay, so there it's a spiritual. Okay. The eternal abode known as Goloka Dham manifests within the material world as the stage for the Supreme Lord's Prakata Lila, materially manifest pastimes, and is called Sri Mathura Dham. And in his Aprakata Lila, transcendentally unmanifest pastimes, the same eternal abode is known as Goloka Dham. Krishna's transcendental pastimes are eternal, right? So therefore saying Vrindavan or saying Goloka, it's the same thing. Krishna's transcendental pastimes are eternal. The devotee who is qualified to perceive the state of Vishuddha Sattva can see Goloka. In fact, even while residing at Gokula within the material world, qualified devotees have the vision of Goloka within Gokula. However, those jivas whose consciousness has been corrupted by the mundane nature cannot perceive Goloka at all. Although Gokula is non-different from Goloka, mundane persons see Gokula as an ordinary place belonging to this material world. Vijaya, what is the eligibility to see Goloka? Right? So in other words, to that degree of material contamination, you see the Dham as just ordinary. And to that degree, that's removed, then you see it as spiritual, special. Right? When it becomes completely purified, you can even see the apricot pastimes manifest. Right? Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur sitting in his house looking over the river to this side here. And he sees all the devotees with their veenas and dancing and singing, and he sees the temple, he sees like that. So it's all, he just sees the manifest pastimes. Right? Even though at this, I mean, the unmanifest, even in the play, even though that's not the time when they're manifest. Right? Does that make sense?
No TV.
Yeah, no TV. Better. What is the eligibility to see Goloka? Goswami, my son, without Krishna's mercy, Goloka cannot be perceived. Krishna has shown the beauty and opulence of Goloka to the residents of Braja by his causeless mercy. Goloka is situated outside the jurisdiction of the mundane nature, and the varieties of existence displayed there are eternal realities, ever-existent, and a transcendental wonder. The Brahma Jyoti is eternally manifest there as Krishna's physical aura. Devotees who are cleansed of material aberrations can perceive this magnificent vision. So in other words, that aura around Krishna, that's the Brahma Jyoti. So that's as much as you see it manifest there. Right? Because when you come out of it, it's just all you see is the Brahma Jyoti. You can't see Krishna. Vijaya, are all the liberated jivas able to perceive Goloka? Goswami, among many millions of liberated souls, one rare soul is found who is a devotee of the Supreme Lord. Those who attain mukti through Astanga Yoga and Brahma Gyan enter Brahma Dham in the state of Atma Vismriti, or forgetfulness of one's individual spiritual self. Right? They don't even know that they are individual. Even though they still are, they forget it. So that merging simply, we can see again, is as a matter of mentality. So therefore, when the Acharya is talking about the oneness in the Lord, they're talking about mentality. Right? That. Yeah. Devotees who are attached to the Lord's Aishwarya and worship Him in awe and reverence also cannot see Goloka. Because they just see Vaikuntha, because they're attached to seeing Him in that awe and reverence and opulence. They serve Sri Narayan and Vaikuntha with pomp and grandeur. Amongst the pure devotees engaged in serving Krishna in the mood of Braja Rasa, only those whose material bondage by Krishna's mercy is completely eradicated are able to see Goloka. But so even you're serving in the mood of Braja, but it's only by Krishna's mercy that then their material contamination is completely removed, then they can see Goloka. Does that make sense? Vijaya, Gurudev, if only such rare, elevated, and liberated devotees can see Goloka, why do the scriptures like Brahma Samhita, Harivamsa, Padma Puran, etc. carry descriptions of Goloka? If Krishna's mercy descends only upon those engaged in Braja Bhajan, why were such narrations about Goloka necessary? Goswami. Those rare souls absorbed in relishing Braja Rasa, who are lifted out of the material world by Krishna and placed in Goloka, can see the entire Goloka. Some Shuddha Bhaktas in Braja Bhava can see certain parts of Goloka. Of the two types of pure devotees, Siddha and Sadaka, the Sadakas have not yet gained the eligibility to see Goloka. Right, so Siddha, they can see, and Sadaka can't, because Sadaka is still here. Right? Siddha Bhaktas are of two varieties, Vastu Siddha, perfect in realization of the ultimate object of Krishna, and Sarup Siddha, those who have achieved the perfection of being reinstated in their spiritual identity. This is a major point. Mm-hmm. Right? Only for understanding things from this side. So in other words, when you have Sarup Siddhi, that means you're situated in your spiritual identity, but that doesn't mean you have love for Krishna. That is cultivated in the association of the pure devotees. Mm-hmm. Right? That are there. Right? The eternal associates. Then you come to Vastu Siddhi. Mm-hmm. That means then prema. So in other words, Sarup Siddha means is the stage of bhava, right? Mm-hmm. And Vastu Siddha means you've come to the stage of prema. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that's how one can be in the spiritual world, not have love for Krishna, and fall into the material world. It's because of these, because devotees generally don't make a distinction between these two, either party, because which of those two parties arguing over where the jiva fell from ever read this book? You understand? This is not the books they read. You understand? They only read tattva, you know, the philosophical elements, so they won't read this book. So they don't know, so they argue. Yes.
Yeah, I even heard one saying that I shouldn't read it.
Because if he reads it, then he'll have to give up his taste for gyan and actually take up, you know, the major taste should come from bhakti. Right? Yeah.
Fun.
Yeah.
Nice. Sarup Siddhi is the realization of the tathasta position.
No, it's a realization. You realize the tathasta position, but it's realization of your relationship with Krishna. You're situated on the spiritual platform. You know your relationship with Krishna. But the point is just because you have the relationship doesn't mean you have love. You know what I'm saying? Let us say the parents and the child have been separated for a long time, whatever is the reason. Then they come together after, you know, 20 years, they meet. Okay, so now, you know, the child hasn't seen the parents. Here means can't recollect. The parents, of course, have seen the child. But so now when they meet, now the potential for that love is there, but it'll have to be cultivated. But now the position of that sarup of being in that family is attained. Does that make sense? So the sarup of having the spiritual form, that you're in the spiritual world, is obtained. Now you have to, within that, now develop love for Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. But that's the natural position of the jivas, is to develop love for Krishna. That's automatic. But the problem is you have love for Krishna because in the environment you use everything for Krishna. But we looked at the environment and thought this is nice for ourselves. That's what is the material vision. That's what brings us here. Right? So now when one goes back, one won't make that mistake. Right? Because once you stick your finger in the fire, you're not going to do it again. So that's why it said, once going there, one never returns. Because you go there, so now you're not going to make that mistake.
It'll be like spiritual...
No, it's not even that, because you've already developed that much. You have developed up to the platform of bhava to be there. So, you know what I'm saying. If not, then it'll be quickened quite... It's on the fast track, so it'll move very fast. Even if one was at a lower stage of thought of Krishna, when one gets to the Gokul Dham, then very quickly in the association of the other devotees, it will come up, because there is no material contamination. There's just you haven't developed that. So very fast it works.
There's no conditioning to hold it back.
There's no conditioning to hold it back. So it happens very quickly. Siddha bhaktas are of two kinds. Vastu Siddha, perfect in the realization of the ultimate objective, Krishna, and Sarup Siddha, those who have achieved the perfection of being reinstated in their spiritual identity. Vastu Siddha, right, because then that means that Sarup Siddha is not those in Brahman, because their spiritual identity hasn't actually been established. Because there is, in Brahman, there is no spiritual identity. So you can't take that actually as Sarup Siddhi. The Vastu Siddha devotees are the glorious and fortunate ones who have been installed directly in the spiritual abode of Goloka by Sri Krishna's mercy. Right? So that means they've been installed, they've been put there. Right? Does that make sense? So we're not talking about internal potency, because they don't come to the material world. They only come when Krishna comes at the pastime, so they're never conditioned. So we're talking jivas. So then the jivas, those who have been by Krishna's mercy, then have entered into it, then they're the Sarup Siddha. So that means those who directly went from... Those are the Vastu Siddha. So they've gone from Sarup Siddha directly to Vastu Siddha. They didn't go from Sarup Siddha to, you know, material, you know, whatever it is, and then coming back to Sarup Siddha and then going to Vastu Siddha. But once one gets to Vastu, you make no distinction. The only in describing it, you're describing that there's two kinds, meaning those who are eternally perfect and those who then become eternally perfect, so that there's the faith that I can do it. Otherwise, we say there's only the eternally perfect and then the eternally bound. Then we say, but how do I get there? I can't do that. No, you say, no, but there's two kinds of eternally perfect. Those who were eternally perfect and those who became eternally perfect. Right? Because if you're starting on the Suru platform, there is no material element. So it's already perfect. So then they go from perfect to more perfect. So it's not a fault, you know, in the logic. Does that make sense? The Sarup Siddha devotees are able to perceive Golok directly, but have not yet received Krishna's mercy to the extent of being lifted out of the material nature and becoming installed in Goloka. So now in this, this would be indicating means either of two things. Is one, the person is within a material body. By meditation, he's come to the platform of bhava. I mean, he's come, by his devotional practice, he's come to the stage of bhava. And by meditation, he's in a sarup. Or those who have left the material form here and accepted the spiritual form there and are directly within the pastime, but it's still within Gokula. Right? So that's why he's saying they haven't got the full view of Goloka. It's the same place, but they say Gokula. Right? So it's only when it comes to Vastu, then one sees Gokula. Goloka. However, Krishna's mercy is gradually opening up and enhancing their spiritual and devotional visions. Hence, they are eligible for a wide range of spiritual perfections. Different graded Swarup Siddha devotees have their spiritual eyes opened to a varying degrees, and their vision of Goloka is proportionate to the amount of Krishna's mercy they have received. Right? So there's five stages of Bhav Sadhana. So as they move from one to the next, then that little bit more is open, right? But it becomes dynamic when they come to the point of samadhi within Smarana Dasa, right? Does that make sense? Because they're in their form, right? So they can see something. They understand their relationship with Krishna. Then the second stage, they're comfortable with that, so they know how to act within that. Because otherwise, at first you're in that. You have to be trained, right? Just like a new member of the family comes, or a new member of the community comes, they don't actually know how to act, so you have to train them. Right? So now they've been trained, so they know how to act within that. So that's vastu. It means now you... Excuse me. Varnadasa. Excuse me. So they've gone from smarana, shravanadasa, hearing, to varnadasa. They are able to... They're comfortable in it. Now starts the smarnadasa, that absorption in Krishna. It doesn't mean that from the first you're not smart, it's not there. From the second it's not. It's just then that's where the focus is on the remembrance. Because the others are there. Now it's remembering Krishna. So when that goes through that five stages, that it gets to samadhi. Right? That develops the purva rag that one wants to be with Krishna. Right? So then those two, three stages being completed, the last two is now where it gets dynamic of how much you can see and go low. Right? Because then now you actually start to take part in the pastimes from a distance, and then you get brought closer, and then you, like that.
Where is that from, those details?
Those details, that is in, I think it's Harinam Chintamani. As long as bhakti is on the platform of sadhana bhakti, everything the sadhana devotee sees in Goloka is slightly tinged with mundane understanding. After being promoted, right, because that's the problem, because he's on the platform of sadhana still, vijaya. So, therefore, he's saying, but the Madhurya Rasa doesn't have the anomalies of the material Madhurya Rasa here. So he's saying there's that tinge. After being promoted to the stage of Bhava Bhakti, the devotee is blessed with the direct glimpses of Goloka. On the level of Prema Bhakti, the devotee sees Goloka to a much greater extent. Right. So in Bhava Bhakti, there's the glimpses. So as he progresses in Bhava, the glimpses get greater. Right. Till he comes to Prema, then they're much. Much greater extent. Vijaya, Gurudev, in what aspects are there differences between Goloka and Braja Gokula? I just looked at it and it said 20 after. So either that was very dyslexic or 20 minutes went by very quickly. Okay, we'll take the second one.
Is there a class next temporary?
No, still today and tomorrow is still the same. Then I'll let you know on Thursday, Friday, and then Monday, Tuesday, maybe full, but we'll play it by ear as we go. But today and tomorrow will still be morning, evening like that.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jaya Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jaya Nitai Gaura ki.